the idea of this class is, this group, is to talk about how you could start a business of your own. And of course, all of you that have even thought of it realize that that's a huge undertaking. Almost every college and university in the country has classes on it. They have incubator classes where you can go in and go to the incubators. There are places, some of the universities will actually dig in and hand you office space, secretary space, stuff like that, to help you get started. And I've put a lot of thought into it, because my goal would be to have a lot of dough millers. In 1991, I had been turned upside down financially by a project that I had done in Iraq. In 1989, I built 30 domes in Iraq, big domes. And in 1990, I had a contract to build 36 more, big ones. And I made the airforms. I was 3 days away from putting the men on the airplanes to go over there. And they started shooting at each other. And the U.S. slapped an embargo on the shipping and then seized my bank account as an Iraqi asset. And so all of a sudden you go from where you think you're doing pretty hot and you're upside down. 12 years later, I got 20% of that money back. But in the meantime, you know, it humbles you and you start doing different things. And one day I'm driving through Dallas and I'm saying to myself, my goal is to build a Dallas a year. Now, those of you thinking of starting your own business, how are you going to build a business that can build a Dallas a year? How can you build a construction company to build a Dallas a year? The Dallas Metroplex has probably got 1.5 million houses in it. You've got skyscrapers, water tanks, roads, everything. How are you going to build a Dallas a year? And it's very, very apparent that nobody's going to. No one company. Take your big guys like Bechtel. Bechtel isn't going to build a Dallas a year. They might build 10 or 15 or 20 skyscrapers, but they're not going to build a Dallas in a year. And so that's what prompted me to start teaching and training. And my thought was, well, if I teach people how to build domes, then they can, if I get enough of 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 companies, they can build a Dallas a year. Well, I started my training program to teach people how to build domes. Now, most of our domes at that point were big domes. Fertilizer storages, we built a few churches, schools, and things like that. But I decided to go back to houses because everybody has to live in a house, everybody has to have a house. And everybody that lives in these houses would it's a universal market. There's a big market. Well, I started teaching the classes April and May. And why? It's still cold, even in Texas, in January. So we started April and May. It's hotter than a pistol here through the summer, so we had the other two in September and October. In some years, we've had so many sign up in one or the other of the classes that we've had to have two. We had several hurricanes down in Florida, and when the hurricanes went on, we always had to have an extra October class. But hurricanes have gone away and people have forgotten. The hazard amnesia, which is a FEMA word, hazard amnesia settles in, people forget about it, you know. Well, we had a hurricane 3 years ago, but it's not a big deal, especially if you're new to Florida. And so we're doing this training and teaching to do this thing to get other people to do it. And it's starting to work. Now, I've had 1,500 people through that class. But out of that 1,500, 450, 60, somewhere in that neighborhood, built one or more domes. And only about that many have built more than one dome. I'm not counting, they may have built three domes for themselves on the old farmstead. Awful lot of good do-it-yourselfers in this country. They come, they learn how, and they go build themselves a home. Never hear from them again. Or they build a garage, a shop, never hear from them again. And so it's been a real struggle. Now, if any of you want to stop me and ask questions, we can do this. But I'm going to come to give you this overview, and then I want to hear Andrew has to say about it. And I see Randy came in here. Maybe they'll have some ideas too. But how do you get them into the business? Now, when I decided to move back to small domes, the concrete pumps that I've been using, they're too expensive. You know, if you're going to build your home, you can't buy a $150,000 concrete pump. Can't buy a $25,000 set of inflators and some of the other stuff. So we started inventing some concrete mixers, concrete pumps, scaled it back to where what we recommend if you're going to be in the dome business, especially if you're in the small domes, you got to be nimble because you're going to move quite a ways away. People, you don't build every house on the streets. You build one here and then one three towns over. So we developed a way where we have a trailer, and you'll see them tomorrow, with that trailer behind a crew cab pickup. We'll haul everything that we need to build a nice big foam home, except for the foam machine. Foam machine, we only need it on job one day, so I use a separate trailer and a separate pickup to go spray the foam. And most of the people I teach, I tell them, don't even get in the foam business. Unless you like a lot of pain, stay out of it, because it's not something you can do once every 6 months. You just can't do it. The machines are too hard to start. If you put it away for 6 months, a real good chance it cost you $5,000 to start it again. So you've got, if you're going to do the foam machine, you've got to spray the roof on the neighbor's place, and you've got to do the trailer house and the underside of the outhouse and all these other places to keep it busy. Well, I had another passion, and we're going to spend a little bit of time on that. The other passion is to try and help people with place to stay. I've got a few slides, we'll go over that, but that was to build little rental units. And so then what I started teaching in the class, I'd say, Michael, go build a rental unit, one of these little ones. You can do it on a credit card. You can build the rental unit and get it rent. And then you can go build another one and get it rent. And frankly, we've talked about it. If we stop building another custom dome for everybody, anybody else that built nothing but rental units financially, we'd be better off. I'm not going to do that because that's not my passion. But I now have 75 rental units down at my place. And we're out in the sticks. We're an hour south of Dallas. Most of the people that stay there have to drive quite a ways to stay there. But it's working. And so one of the things that I'm going to let Andrew talk to you about some of his ideas, and then I'll go through these things on these rental units. One thing that I am seriously thinking about, and I talked a little bit about it at the last conference, and I'd like some feedback from you. Would it help if I started franchising? If we started franchising. Now, I'm an independent cuss, and the idea of building a hamburger stand, I can do that. I think that could kind of be fun, you know, especially if we shake the dome like a hamburger. But then, I would like to run it, except I'd like to run it for 3 weeks and then let somebody else take it over. So. But the reality is the successful hamburger stands are not done by individuals. Do you know anybody that has a successful hamburger stand? I don't know anybody that has a successful hamburger stand. You'll see a few restaurants. What happens is a guy starts a restaurant, and before long, he's got them lined up out the door. People coming from every direction to go to the restaurant. And then he decides, well, if I open another one across town, he opens a second one. And now the two are doing about the same amount of business. He's just going nuts driving back and forth. And then they talk him into opening the third one. And by the time they're up to four, he's either shot in a frontal or somebody comes in, buys him out, and hands him to their franchise. And I've thought an awful lot about it. I don't know. Do you ever see a McDonald's go out of business? When's the last time you saw a McDonald's torn down for a street, for a subservice station or something else? You'll see him torn down and rebuilt.
Yes.
Maybe if he's in the wrong spot, they'll put some really high dollar thing in its place. But you don't see him torn down for other things. Why? Because they've got Henry set of rules that if you're going to have that McDonald's, you're going to build that way every time. You and I know we go and buy a French fry, it's going to taste the same. In fact, I got involved in our background's potatoes. And I developed a system of helping to store potatoes over a long time. And I got involved with a group, went over to Korea, and we built potato storages. And they ask us to. Why? Because you can grow five times as much food per acre with a potato than you can with any grain crop. It's so much more. And what they wanted to do is they wanted to get Korea self-sustaining on their food, where they instead of buying food all the time. And so they get planted corn or potatoes. And the Koreans said, that's what we feed the hogs. Well, it doesn't even make good hog food, but that was. So what did they do? They went over and got McDonald's. They're going to Seoul, South Korea and build up McDonald's. And pretty soon people are having their McDonald's potatoes. Now all of a sudden went from hog food to that high-end American McDonald's foods. And the potato industry just took off like a rocket. And but it's that franchise thing. Now, one of the things, too, is the guys that come to these classes are all a little bit like me, you know? The independent cusses, they want to stay independent. But I've asked myself a lot, and I want you, when we get to another spot here, I'm going to ask you what you think about it. How many think that that would be a good idea to start franchising? Pick some subject, pick some things that we could do to make this thing work. So that you could still be independent, but you'd have me or Andrew or Mandy, one of them, looking over your shoulder and saying, hey, this is what you gotta do to do it. Now, beyond that, we have a gentleman here from Kenya, and he and I have been talking about building stuff in Kenya. Now that's a big business. It's got a lot of pain involved. You don't get to sleep in your bed at night. You do a lot of traveling. Some of you may want to get into that sort of thing. A lot of you want to live, and this is something you have to decide. You want to live within 20 miles of your work or 40 miles of your work. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to let Andrew spend a minute and tell you what he wants to tell you about starting your own business. Ian ran, and Randy started it not too long ago. And then he'll turn it back to me, and I'm going to go into the rental units for a few minutes.
There's a lot of things starting a business. Some of you have done it. It's kind of exciting, kind of challenging. The one thing that David talked about that is the hardest part about starting your own business, the fact that it's scattered all over the country or all over the world. There are a lot of regulations. For example, I'm headed to California next week to take a test for Tennessee. I don't know exactly how that works. You go to California and take a Tennessee contractor's test. You have to be licensed in about half of the states require a state license. The other half require licensing on another level, which means you have to post tax bonds, which means you have to carry limits of liability insurance, workman's compensation insurances. Those limits are just going up. I met with our bonding agent, our insurance agent, just a few days ago, and he said that in reality, our limits are legally, they're meeting the mark, but he says when we do our next renewal, we need to seriously look at higher liability limits because the litigation and the kind of the legal feel of the country right now. So that's changing. One of the benefits of the rentals have, and what David I think is kind of is trying to help people understand, is if you're going to start in construction, why not first start making money for yourself? Build for yourself. Getting financing to build your own rental units is going to be easier than trying to finance capital expenditures for a brand new company, where you're going to go out and build on the spec that there's enough people out there that are going to want you to go out and build a dome for them. The rental units carry a lot less risk. They're right in your backyard. You're able to sleep in your own bed and be able to work on them. One of the benefits of the rental units is the fact that they're smaller and they can be treated pretty easily. You can learn a few lessons and take your lumps, which you will do in any new venture, but you can do it on a smaller scale and you don't have to answer to someone else. You'll be able to learn your lessons and lick your wounds in private. One of the other elements that go along with the rental units is the fact that David said if he wanted to really make money, he'd stop and he would just build rental units, and that's because the need is so great. And our country and countries all over the world are in serious need of housing shortages, serious need of housing because of shortages. He shared some articles with me about kind of the way people are living and the way they're moving, and we need more housing. We need more good housing, especially low income and mid income housing. I think there's there's some social responsibility, I guess, that's being treated when you work on projects like that. I know that what David has proved by building 75 rental units in a community with just a couple thousand people and being able to keep them full 100% of the time and have a waiting list of 30 people besides, it's pretty evident that the need is there. The Monolithic Dome community is a pretty tight community. We are all pretty willing to help and dig in. I know we get called on several projects a year to go and assist and help and sometimes bail out people because it's rough and dirty work, but it's good work, it's honest work, and it can be profitable if it's done right. Particularly, I think with the way that the rental units are lining up. So I guess it's my encouragement to all of you to continue whatever the endeavors are that you're pursuing. It'll feel like an uphill battle at times, but there's been a whole lot of groundwork that's been laid already, and you won't find anyone more willing and open to share it than David and his whole organization, which is geared to simply servicing the dome industry. And he does it without a lot of reward, just because that is his passion. So I think you'll find that you have a pretty good ace in the hole in that respect.
Well, thank you, Andrew. And Andrew and Randy and the others, they're out there helping you. What I'd like to do is I want to talk about the rental units because it's key. It's the safest way that I can think of you making money in the dome business. This guy right here is what we built, is our first. And we built about, I have about 60, 70 of them out there. And you're going to see them when you go out there tomorrow. You can look at that thing. It's got a nice big bathroom. It's got a kitchen, full kitchen. And the rest of it's a single room. It's fascinating what people do with that. No table, couple or three chairs, and a bed frame, and a mattress. We have a microwave over the refrigerator, the stove refrigerator. So people have to have their own bedding, and they have to have their own eating utensils. They're very energy efficient. We get by with roughly $50 a month as our utility costs on these buildings. And 314 square feet. Now, we run a monthly inspection. And the inspections, it's fascinating. You'll see people that'll have three kids. Mama, single moms, we get quite a lot of single moms. Two or three kids, they'll have bunk beds, they'll have screens, they'll have them divided up in 40 different ways. It used to be we always put a heater, this heater shown here, under that window. We quit doing that. What we would do is we have an air conditioner that fits at that window. Oh, you cussing machine, you're going to have to keep running that one. The air conditioner, we can't move it. It's got to be at a window. But the heater, we don't do that anymore. We just give them a $1 heater and they go plug it in wherever they want it. And that doesn't matter whether we're talking in Italy, Texas, or in Alaska. That little heater you buy for $20 will heat that building in any of those locations. What we do is we put a covered parking, this unit, and I figure by the time I got all of my costs involved, I've got about $35,000 in that thing. Now, it's been fascinating to watch people appraise it. If they appraise it using money, it'll be appraised in the $50,000, $60,000 range. If they appraise it, what most of them try and do is appraise it by cost. But I had these renting, and I had four smaller versions, little domes, that were 192 square feet. One day I had a gal walk out of my place crying because she couldn't rent one of them. And Ann tried to rent her one of these 100 footers. I mean, these that we rent. We rent them at a net $100 or $110 a week. All the utilities paid. And if they pay by the Friday, they can pay $100 a week. And she said, she went out of there crying. She says, I cannot afford that. Because I have $660 a month as my total Social Security check. She says, my son helps me with the with my car. But she said, I just can't pay that kind of money and still eat and do some of the other things. Well, I put my staff to working together and I said, come up with this one. And we spent a lot of work on that one. We finally even made a mock-up in one of the other domes. And each of the quarters is 200 square feet. Well, what happens is as soon as I say that, I always have somebody say, well, 200 square feet, that's just too little. But those are the same people who would think nothing of moving them and their wife and two kids into a travel trailer and spending months traveling around the world in a 160 square foot travel trailer. A lot of it's right here. we immediately, when we went to work and started building, you're going to see one tomorrow. Unit C has been left open. It could have been rented 40 times in the last 2 weeks. Unit C is left open so that you can see it. The first one, unit A, lady moved in there one day, and I stopped over there 3 days later, and she's got a husband and two kids. I said, whoa, 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 I didn't build these for a family. And I moved her back into one of these with her husband and two kids, and it's still tight. But they're doing fine, and they can afford it. Now this is taken in here. This is their closet. And instead of making it out of 2x4s and stuff, we bought a kitchen stack that has two sides. There's a shelf for a closet, and then here's the stove refrigerator, and you can see how they line up inside there. This is the same, this is a picture again in a bigger thing. You can see there's a window there.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's two doors on each side. There's two windows on each side, and that's why it's a fourplex. There's four units in this thing. Now there's room under this window for a bed. It can be a single bed or a double bed. And over the window is where the air conditioner is. And then you can plug the heater wherever you want to do. And this is looking at the kitchen. Oh, we changed the kitchen one little bit since we built this one. From here on, this will come across. The light will move down and give you a little more cabinet that you can reach into, and the mirror will come out. The mirror goes on the end of the wardrobe. But this kitchen, we make exactly the same for both units so that we can do that. Now here's another set of, there's 48 of these out at Morgan Road. And we just picked up building permits for 56 more that we're going to be doing soon. Now why in the world would I be building all of these rental units? I don't need them. One is they sure look good for retirement. They make money. They're retirement for all of us. All of my key people own a part of this operation. But I'm trying to show that if you stand back here and you threw a dart at the U.S. map, it wouldn't matter where that dart landed, there'd be a need. Now, one of the workshops, I had a man there that was 70 years old, and he wanted to build something for his wife for retirement because she was a lot younger than him. And he said, I'm over in the middle of Mississippi. It's 30 miles to this town, it's 30 miles to that town from where I live. He says, I can't build there. I said, sure you can. Build on the farm right where you are. Well, I'm 30 miles from the town. Boy. I said, how far are you from the service station? He says, it's 7 miles down to the freeway and there's a service station there. Well, he argued with me and with himself, and they finally built one of them. When he got it all done, he said he went down to the service station, put a 3x5 card on the bulletin board, and said he had this unit for rent, $125 a week, put his phone number on it. He said, then I walked over to the repair part of the service station, talked to the guy there for a few minutes, and went home. So when I got home, my wife had had three phone calls, and there was a guy standing there with the card. He said, I decided you knew what you were talking about. He said, so I built two more. And he says, I built these on my money and I ran out of money. He said, but they just instantly fell. He said, so then I got my motorhome and pulled it in line with the other three. And he says, I rent the motorhome on the same basis. He says, it'll probably never take another trip with me. But he's like, I'm getting money out of the motorhome. Now, why does it work? Most people won't take the time to research what they're doing. This is coming out of the 99 U.S. Census. That's where this data comes from. Look at what it says. Of the renters in America, one person renting is 37% of all the renters. One person. two people renting adds another 27%. So essentially, two-thirds of all the renters of America are one or two people looking for a place to stay. How much space do they need? 200 square foot will suffice any pair of people, unless you got all your junk. Now, are we buying a house, or are we renting a house to store junk, or are we buying or renting a house to store us? If the junk overpowers, then you better go find someplace else to rent. But it's something that we need to look at. Now, here's the income. And I was talking to a fellow the other day, and I said, here's the income. It was on Friday. He was going to come back and spend some more time on Monday. He says, I don't think your numbers are right. This is $8 an hour. 40% of the renters in America are making less than $8 an hour. And he said, well, I don't see them. And I'll tell you what. When you come back Monday, you tell me how many people that you hand money to. If you hand money at a service station, at a grocery store, at a clothing store, wherever you hand money to them, they most likely are making less than $8 an hour. And two-thirds of them will fit in your building. And that says that the most they can afford is $450 a month for a place to live, including all our utilities. Look at how many places there are to rent that's at $452. $450. Look how many are up in here. That's why the apartment houses, when they have a downturn, the apartment houses go empty. They're given free rent. This is where the people we're talking about. And 15% of these are substandard. And their definition of substandard is they have outside toilets, or they use combined facilities. They are truly substandard. So what you're doing is you're looking to service those folks. Now I get angry after a while. I'm getting more angry about it. I have people come in and they'll say, don't you just get a bunch of drug addicts and poor people have troubles? Hey, you've never seen a thief until you find one in a real nice looking suit and talk. We have some people with troubles. They got challenges, and they have them. But they're as fine of folks. We trust them with our money. Everybody gives them money. We go to the service station and hand them our money. And we've found, when we do our inspections, most of them are just fine as can be. Now, you do find a few guys, especially guys, especially young guys. And some young girls that you wonder who raised them. But you can't even generalize that, because you have this guy who's neater than your wife. And that guy, he's, and in the times, we've had things like, we had a couple move out one time that we had to check their room to see if they had a meth lab in it. Turns out they hadn't. But that's something that all apartment houses have to worry about, and hotels and other stuff. But you see the need. The need is there. Now, there's a book called Nickel and Dime. If you don't believe me, go read that book. It's, now, what kind of money can you make? I figure if I borrow for 15 years at 9% interest, most of the money for that, probably 75% of the money, and I put up the rest of the money myself, this is kind of the cash flow. I get 21% every month. It's above the rentals. Now, there's very few businesses that will give you that kind of rate of return. Now, I've got 15% here, 5% there, 7% up there, and vacancy of 5%. So far, we've never seen 5%. Sometime they'll get there. But when he was talking about 30 on the waiting list, the only reason there's not more than 30 is because that's where she chops it off.
Well.
When it gets to 30, she says, I'm sorry, it's too far out. It's months away. And if you want to run them yourself, this money is yours too. That 12% right there. Now there will be some maintenance. And it's amazing, you find out that there's some toilets that work better than others, and you find out there's some faucets that need more repair than others. And it, you're not without sin. Now, monthly profit and loss, if you don't figure in this, those of you who are not an accountant, you say, well, how can the one have the cash of 21% and then the next one show your net profit is 31%? That's an accounting thing. This is actually the profit that you're making. And you can make that. It's fascinating. And when people don't pay their rent, they've not paid for 1 week. It isn't like an old house you buy and you go rent it and you don't get the rent and it's a month goes by. And then it's 2 months. We got 1-2 weeks and we instantly know whether we got a problem. And we found that if we stay on top of the money, the places are kept nicer, get nicer people, they stay. There's a time there where I kind of backed off. If I want to back off on somebody, I can do that. I had one man that moved in out of his car. We called him the general. Nice old guy. Life had been tough. He'd been in Vietnam. He'd had just a whole... And he moved into one of our little $68 rental things. And he'd come in and he'd drive my girls crazy. He'd come in and pay his $21.50 is all the money he had on him one day. And another week later, he'd come back in $17. And 3 days later, $9.50. And he just, should we throw him out? And I said, well, now that's fine at that point. But you know, that gentleman lived there and paying these little bits and pieces. And one day he came in to ask him, he says, how much do I owe? And she says, oh. She didn't want to add it up. She finally added it up. $2,100 and some odd. Thank you. Out he went. He come back and the next morning handed her a check for $2,100 and some odd. He said, by the way, I'm giving you notice that I'm going to move out. And it turns out that he'd added an aunt that had died and left him some money. And he could now afford to move into an assisted living place. But he very honorably paid off what he owed, moved up to the assisted living place. Fantastic. Now, I'm not going to allow him to stay in there if he's doing some things that some people do, but in this case, you have the decision where you can help some people out. Here's your interest expense, appreciation. But get thinking about this. This is your expenses. Your vacancy stuff. This, when that baby's paid for, is yours. And I guarantee you, you can't make that kind of money with bigger rental units. I've had some real experts spend time on this thing, these flowcharts and stuff, and they come back and say, you're right. You cannot. Maurice Dubois is here, and he does a lot of rentals and stuff, and he told me the other day, he says, you finally banged me over the head, and I realized what you're saying. He said, I'm going to start building the rental units. Now, is there competitors? No, there's no competitors. How many could you build? How many do you think you could use in the Dallas area? 500? 1,000? 10,000? I submit that you could... If you had 10,000 out there, that by the end of next week, they'd be rented. Just because the need is so great. People move out of their cars. They move out of the homeless shelters. They move out of the house. You'd be surprised how many people come into our office and say, I want you to rent this to my daughter because she is moving out of the house. Or my son because he is moving out of the house. And I am paying, we make them pay $330 upfront for them. And she says, here's your $330. Call me if it doesn't work out. My daughter is now, I guess she's given mama some lip or whatever, but they're now moved out of the house. But there's an option, see, and a place they can go. Now, it's also kind of fascinating, and I want you to look at it when you get out of my place. We have four of them right in town. And the people love them because they can walk to the grocery store, they can walk. Not that that's a big deal because town's only got about three things in it. There's also 20, we've got 25 units out of my place. And they live right across the road from me. And folks say, oh, don't you hate us? They're just fine. If I need something, I can walk over and ask them for some help. But, you know, 5 minutes, okay. They love being there because they feel, they like it. Because they're out of town a little ways. They feel safe. They feel secure. And then the other 48 are a mile and a half south of town on 77. And it's on your map. So you can go down and take a look. Well, you go down at the other 48. And I call them my party animals. There's one double row in particular that are close together. I got them a little too close together. There's 48 of them. And they just love them. Now, you see they put dish antennas up. I mean, they're not, this isn't, it's by the week. But they're there by the year. And a lot of them are there for multiple years. Some of them there 6 months, whatever else. Now, the need is astronomical. We started out with the little single units, then we went to these fourplexes. My next jump is I want to go to 24 units in one to go into areas where the land is really expensive. This one, I figure I can put 20 per acre if I can hook to a town sewer and water system. Sewer system, really. I hook to a town sewer system, I can put 20 to an acre and they fit just fine. Larry's laid out once on that one. This one, we can put more living units per acre with this one because it's a little tighter. I don't know if we looked at what the maximum would be, but it'd be 24 to 30, somewhere in that neighborhood, 24 to 28. They can be built on brownfields. Now, what's a brownfield? A brownfield is where they've abandoned an old factory or where they've pulled something off. You can go to your city administration and say, you got any brownfields? And quite often, they'll have stuff on their tax rolls nobody wants. It's 4, 5, 6 acres. I think, that the closer you can get to 75 or 100 units, in a location, the better off you'll be if you want to put a manager and a maintenance man there. If you're going to do the managing and maintenance, you can start these with a credit card. Now, I started these, I had a guy down in Florida who's now building 5 of these fourplexes. And he's got a new tilt to it. I don't know that I ever thought of it. But he's building these 5. And he's selling each unit as a condo. Now we figure we're about $100,000 in this unit, which is about $25,000 per unit. He's selling these condos for $50,000. You don't have to be real good with a pencil to figure out that he's making some money. So one of the reasons that I brought this in is just if you think you would like to get in the dome business, this is a pretty good place to start. And if you make a little mess up on the dome, you either paint it red or you just ignore it. It's not like if I build a house for him and his wife walks in there and she's like, boy, I don't like the way that looks. So now I got a problem. So, but if I'm renting it, I don't like the way it looks. Well, go cut the one down the street. See where I'm coming? That's the only way I can see to really jump you into the dome business quickly. Go what we've done is taken these two buildings and we've made some few changes. This guy, we built it as an eco shell. A lot of places where we work, we don't pay much. You're paying, I think we have 350 people on the payroll in Indonesia. And the payroll was $1,000 a day. Just do the math. $1,000 a day, we had 350 people working. We took every tool away from them except the inflator, and they had a wheelbarrow, and they had mixers, right? They'd mix them and put them on by hand. They get the super insulation, they didn't get the other stuff. But they're building those domes down there for $1,500, and they can live in. I have one of the pictures here, but I have a picture of the president of India with his hand on one of the domes, and this is what we need, and it is needed. And you train them how to do it with the tools. We're building some in India right now. We pay a man 90 cents a day. And we take all the equipment away from it and make them do it by hand. We've developed little concrete mixers. They're just a 4-foot square piece of fabric. You dump the ingredients in it, and guy on that side, guy on that side. You stir the thing, haul it over to where you want to dump it. Now, I can't even begin to mix concrete that cheap because I'm paying two guys 90 cents for, they mix a cubic foot every time they mix one, and you can't even get close to that. And so, from over where we're talking, the other thing now is we're trying to develop some bigger ones. 5-story walk-ups, 3-story walk-ups, so that we can put them in places where they need that, where the land's more expensive. We're one page ahead of you in the book. Now, I've talked so much that there, this guy's who come in here to shut me off. Talk to me here, now, later. Monolithic.com is our website. You can go to it. You can send me emails. Tell me what you think.
Getting back to your franchise question, I just thought 501c3 in the town of Rockville. And because we've got the hurricanes coming through there. And what we're going to do is start using the domes as shelters for the city. And I'm from Louisiana originally, and I'm planning on getting the same dome system down to the So getting back to your national question, I think it's a good idea that we do that and provide better living for people throughout the world.
We would really like to help you do that.
The question with that would be, some cities and some towns not going to accept the dome living. So if you did the franchise, how would you make that happen?
Well, there are some cities that doesn't matter what, they're not going to want one. I find it, I build them a school that's a tornado shelter, and they give me gas. Whoa. But FEMA has now agreed to finance some school buildings in Missouri and some community shelters in Ohio. They've agreed to do 75% of the cost of financing, because they are tornado shelters. And in one place, there'll be a community center, and the other place, there'll be a school. I do not know, except on a case-by-case basis. When it comes to Louisiana, I have a problem. I do not want to help rebuild New Orleans in that hole.
No, I'm from the country. My sister lives in New Orleans, but I'm in a rural area of the town where my senior citizen lost power, and they were not able to maintain
air and heat. So I'm going back to the rural area. I'm not worried about Louisiana. And we have family property here. It's not going to be for the Louisiana. Acres. So this is the building in the rural area. The 501c3, I applaud you for getting it set up. You need to be sure you're talking to Rebecca, because she has some ideas. She applied for and got a grant recently for a $120,000 from Google, and they're going to help promote and push and do things.
And you know about the homeless sector. I currently rent houses. I have about 35 units of the convention units that I rent out of my own personal home. And I've been around those houses. HUD, which is a section 8 type home, and I want to compare the standards. Like you mentioned, a little heater that plug in, they wouldn't accept that. You got to have something that built into the wall, you know, like a...
And you can do that. But my problem with Section 8 is they've always wanted so many square feet.
Yeah.
And if I build that many square feet, I got to build garbage.
Right.
This is petite housing. It's nice and it's small.
And the fourplex, what are you renting those for?
Down in Italy, where I got them right now, I'm renting them for $75 a week.
Okay.
Now, I would say in most places you'd get somewhere around $100.
Okay.
That'll still be way, way below anybody else. See, she's into Section 8, and I've chosen to stay in the area that it's above government, above the government. I don't want government financing. I don't want government in my pocket. And so I've chosen to stay that way. For instance, if I go to the state of Texas, I can borrow money at real low interest rates, but I got to have a minimum size of 700 square feet. Well, if I do that, I got to build a garbage thing. I can build a garbage thing. I know how to take them, throw some 2x4s, put some hardy board on it, spray it with some foam, and I got to build it. But I'm not interested in doing it, because what's that building worth in 20 years?
David, what's the square footage of your basic, did you say around 340?
The little 20-footer is 314.
314.
And the other one's 200.
And I believe you said you had about $35,000 cost in the 314.
Yeah, more than that's including the driveway and the covers.
Yeah, that's more than 100.
Is that the landscaping?
314, I've got about $3,500. $35,000.
It sounds to me you're going through the expense side and so forth. It sounds to me like you've identified a niche market where really, on a per square foot basis, they're really paying premium rent.
That's true.
But there's a huge need, we all know, for affordable housing. And if we can narrow down that niche that you're targeting into and you fit into, you might exchange some interesting ideas.
And that's where we've done. What I did is I ran an analysis and said, where's the need? I cannot do anything for mama with four kids. Can't do anything for them. She needs a home, she needs a place for the four kids, she needs somebody to help with the babysitting, she needs a job. The federal government or the 501c3s have got to step in and take care of that. What I'm shooting for is this huge group that could be your son and daughter, could be my son and daughter, could be a mother, could be a whatever, that are not on the government dole, but they're down on the lower end.
They will fit into and make use of that smaller space.
Absolutely.
314 square feet is substantially less than even an efficiency department. But you found a population out there that it works for them.
Any place, any town you go, you'll find a travel trailer park full of travel trailers and people living in them.
Mm-hmm.
That's way smaller than this.
Right.
And so, you know, I don't take there. This thing is so big that nobody's identified it. I don't know why they haven't identified it.
How difficult is it to get a permit for a dome or building permit?
I've not had very much trouble, but I'm very careful. I build these things as by the week motels.
Yeah.
So I find a piece of land that will let me build a motel.
Yeah.
I walk in there and say, I want to build a motel, a by-the-week motel, and I want to put it on this piece of land. And if they say, no, you can't do that, you go look someplace else.